Hey everyone, this is Steve from Heartbeats Farm, just here reading you the Massachusetts vegetable notes again. This is the volume 36, 4 for 2024. This is a long one. It first starts out, they're thanking all their sponsors. So they got the Vegetable and Berry Growers Association, Harris Seeds, Wesco, IPM Labs, Vermont Compost Company, Valent, Johnny Selected Seeds, Rimmel Greenhouse Systems, CT Greenhouses, Farm Credit East, Fortown Farm, and Chunglo Farm. Next is crop conditions. Fields are drying out, and folks are plowing, disking, and putting the first peas, seeds, in Brassica, lettuce, scallion, beet, and chard transplants into the ground. Tunnels continue to be turned over from winter to summer crops. Garlic plants are growing fast now, and for those using inorganic forms of nitrogen, it's time to fertilize. Research from Cornell Extension has shown that the ideal fertility plan for garlic is to apply 50 pounds of nitrogen in the spring. 50 pounds of nitrogen per acre, not just 50 pounds. The plants will take up all that nitrogen that they need by the end of May. Most nitrogen sources available to organic growers need to be processed by soil microbes in order to become available to plants, which takes time in cold soils. So organic growers will likely need to continue relying on fall applied nitrogen and should apply up to 100 pounds per acre of nitrogen. Next, we roll into pest alerts. Late blight. Wasn't expecting to read about late blight in April, but here we go. Late blight outbreak was observed on high tunnel tomatoes in central New York last week. We encourage growers to be extra vigilant in scouting for late blight in tunnel tomato crops and seedling flats right now, and remain vigilant with scouting as the field season starts. If growers observe late blight on potatoes or tomatoes, they should bag and remove infected plants sent to a landfill or otherwise destroy them. Do not compost infected tissues as it can reinfect surrounding plantings. If you suspect late blight in Massachusetts, please contact the UMass Veggie at umass.edu. Give them a call at 413-577-3976. Protect and fungicides like copper and chlorolanolanil must be applied before disease becomes established. Systematic fungicides like Ritomil and Arondis have stronger activity but are still best used when disease levels are low. Fungicide applications for late blight are not recommended for mass growers. Allium leaf miner. Emergence has begun in Plymouth, Bristol, Barnstable, and Dukes County and is expected to begin in the next week or so in most of the rest of the state. Adult flies will emerge from fields that had infested crops last year and fly and find new allium hosts. For example, scallions, perennial chives, overwintered onions, and wild allium species. Flies are active for 5 to 6 weeks, usually until approximately the end of May. The maggots will tunnel down to the base of the plant and damage can result in secondary rots. The presence of maggots or pupa within the plant makes crops unmarketable. When the emergence begins in your area, start scouting any unprotected allium crops for straight lines of small, about 2 millimeter diameter, white ovipositioned marks. These marks are often found at the tips of leaves. Adults can also be trapped using yellow sticky cards placed within the crop. Adults have a distinctive yellow-orange spot at the top of their heads. There's a photo of this. If the ALM flies are not likely to be emerging from the soil around your spring allium crop, i.e. there's no history of infestation in the field, you can cover crops with row cover or insect net to exclude flies. Conventional growers can apply diuntafurin, like scorpion or venom, or another product, Exoril or Radiant, starting up to 2 weeks after feeding. Oviposition marks are detected. All the above materials are systematic or translaminar. Activity will be effective against larvae. Include a surfactant to limit runoff and maximize uptake, unless labels prevent it. Organic growers should apply Entrust at 6 ounces per acre, plus Impede at 1 to 1.5% solution two times, 2 to 4 weeks after first detecting ALM in a crop. Next, aphids in high tunnels. As folks are finishing up high tunnel crops and turning over those tunnels, we've been getting lots of questions about aphid control and whether aphids in winter crops will carry over into summer crops. It depends on the aphid species. Some species have a wide host range, while others are more specific. There's an article in this issue for pointers on identifying aphid species. You can also reach out to them for help. And there's information about establishing a biocontrol program. Lesion nematodes were identified in a spring high tunnel lettuce planting last week. The lettuces were turning brown and rotting at the base up. And the grower reported similar symptoms in kale plantings in the tunnel last fall. Several very common soil-borne fungal pathogens can cause identical symptoms to these. So getting an accurate diagnosis from the UMass Plant Diagnostic Lab is critical. Lesion nematodes have a very wide host range, including all vegetable crops, minimizing the efficacy of crop rotation as a management strategy. The invasion of the nematode into the root creates necrotic areas that vary from individual lesions to necrosis of the entire root system, and the damage can cause entry points for secondary rot pathogens. Management options include biofumigation, green manures like sedan grass hybrids or sorghum sedan grass, brown mustard. You can pre-plant fumigation with conventional soil fumigants. There's anaerobic soil disinfestation, there's a link to that, and or the removal and replacement of the top 2 feet of soil. I feel like the last one is a lot of work. All right, next, be on the lookout for spring maggot pests. There are 3 maggot fly pests that are active on Massachusetts vegetable farms in the early spring. You got seed corn maggots, cabbage maggots, and onion maggots. The emergence of adult flies from pupa that overwinter in the soil can be predicted using growing degree days, GDDs, with a base temperature of 40 degrees Fahrenheit. The base temperature for monitoring the emergence of maggot flies is lower than the base temperature for many other vegetable pests because they are active at fairly cool temperatures early in the spring. These 3 maggot fly pests emerge and reach peak flight at different times throughout the spring. There's a table. And infest different crops. Seed corn maggot reached peak flight in the earliest of spring and has a host range of over 30 crops, including alliums and brassicas. This maggot is a common reason for poor germination of peas or small plantings of sweet corn. Cabbage and onion maggots are host-specific, attacking brassicas and alliums, respectively. So, growing degree days are the number of degrees that the average daily temperature exceeds a base temperature at which a particular organism is dormant. GDD equals Tmax plus Tmin divided by 2 minus the T base. If the average temperature for a day is lower than the base temperature, then no GDD accumulate. GDD accumulate daily starting on a specific date by adding each day's total GDD to the previous tally. There is a table, the comparison of maggot fly biology. We already talked about their hosts, so next, peak flight, sea corn maggot. Peak flight is at 360 GDD, base 40. The adults are small, they have 3 stripes on the thorax, they hatch in 2 to 4 days, they're active for 3 weeks, they're in the soil for 1 to 2 weeks before the next generation of adults emerge. Short 21-day life cycle, 3 generations per year, usually only 1 spring generation is damaging. Cabbage maggots, they host our brassicas. They first peak flight is 452 GDD, base 40. They're medium. They only have 2 stripes on the thorax. They hatch in 7 to 10 days. They're active for 2 to 4 weeks. They're in the soil for 2 to 3 weeks before the next generation of adults emerge. And they have a long 60-day life cycle, 4 generations per year. Spring and fall generations are most damaging. Onion maggots, they go after alliums. Their first peak flight is 735 GDD. They're relatively large compared to the other ones. They hatch in 2 to 5 days. They're active for 2 to 3 weeks. They're in the soil for 3 to 4 weeks before the next generation of adults emerge. They have a medium 30-day life cycle with 3 generations per year. but usually only the spring generation is damaging, which is good. So next is a table on GDD accumulation from January 1st to April 17th. In Western Mass, Deerfield has 220, Westfield 269, Chicopee Falls 274, South Deerfield 250. Central Mass, you have Leominster at 225, North Bridge at 249, Worcester at 252. Eastern Mass, we have Bolton at 242, Stowe at 238, Lawrence 230, that's Lawrence Airport, Ipswich 288, East Bridgewater 303, Boston at 284, and Providence leading the way with 311. Seed corn, cabbage, and onion maggots share many characteristics. There are 3 to 4 generations of each pest per year. They prefer cooler temperatures, so the spring and fall generations are typically worse than the midsummer generations. The adult flies of all three species emerge from pupa that overwintered in the fields, where a host crop was in the previous fall. Adults emerge from soils, mate, and then search for a host plant. Eggs are laid at the bases of the host plant or on emerging seedlings. The resulting larvae will feed on host roots, causing the plants to collapse, or in the case of seed corn maggot, kill seedlings before they emerge. All three flies are attracted to decomposing organic matter, and infestation are often worse in manured, cover cropped, or composted fields where organic matter is still breaking down. Several consecutive days of soil temperatures above 95 degrees Fahrenheit can kill the larva. All three maggot fly adults are similar in appearance, small, gray, humpback, housefly-like, and about 5 to 7 millimeters. There are pictures of the eggs. Preventative measures are generally the most effective for managing these pests, as chemical treatment options are limited. These may include using floating row cover or insect netting to protect plants from egg-laying adults, delaying planting susceptible crops until the first emergence has largely passed, or waiting to plant until soil temperature is high enough to kill the larva. Most labeled pesticides for maggots are labeled only for pre-plant, at the time of planting or seeding, or immediately after setting transplants. Use pre- or at-plant treatments where damaging populations are expected, such as fields with high organic matter or history of infestation. Scouting for adults and eggs can help you understand infestation levels and inform management decisions in future plantings. Below is more information about each maggot pest. So seed corn maggots, the adults have likely begun emerging in many fields in Massachusetts with high peak expected in the next week in Eastern Mass, within the next few weeks in Central and Western Mass. Emerging flies will lay eggs on the soil surface. Hatching larvae will burrow into the soil in search of food and penetrate seeds as a seed coat splits open, killing the seeds before they germinate, causing poor stand. Where possible, delay planting for several weeks in the spring after a cover crop is incorporated to allow organic matter to break down. Warmer soils with more decomposed organic matter will mean fewer problems with seed corn maggot. Floating row cover is not as effective in managing seed corn maggot because this pest has many hosts and could have overwintered in virtually any field on your farm. If you cover plants in an infested field, the adults will emerge under the row cover. Organic fertilizers containing seed meals can attract this pest. Other pests and diseases include wireworm and damping off can also prevent seedlings from emerging. Check for maggots and feeding tunnels inside seeds and stems to confirm what pest you're dealing with. Plant shallowly to promote rapid seed emergence. Among bean varieties, those with a dark seed coat sustain less injury than white varieties. Preventative chemical treatments include commercially applied systematic seed treatments and in-furrow applications of insecticides. Rescue treatments are not effective. If there is enough damage to warrant replanting, wait at least 5 days. If the maggots are a quarter inch long, if they're smaller than that, wait at least 10 days to make sure that they have pupated and will not damage the new seeds. So don't be in a rush. Next, we got cabbage maggots. Cabbage maggot flies are either nearing or just past first emergence across the state, depending on accumulated GDDs in your area. You know, reference the table. A good indicator of the first cabbage maggot peak flight is blooming of the common roadside weed, yellow rocket, or wintergrass. Row covers can be very effective in spraying against this pest as long as crops are rotated into fields without a history of recent infestation. Since, as with seed corn maggot, if there are pupae in the soil from the previous season with the adults, then the adults will emerge under the row covers. Cabbage maggot larvae feed on brassica crop roots, causing stunting, wilting, and plant death. In brassica root crops like radish, turnips, and rutabaga, cabbage maggot tunneling renders the crops unmarketable. Inspecting the roots of symptomatic plants may reveal the legless white maggots, brown oblong pupae, and or tunnels from maggot feeding. There can be up to 4 generations of cabbage maggots per year. There is a model for tracking the emergence of cabbage maggot on the Network for Environmental and Weather Applications, also known as NOAA. There is a link to that on the left-hand side of the page. You can choose a weather station close to you. And then when GDDs indicate peak flight, this is again 452 GDDs, or when adult flies are found on sticky cards placed in the field, begin scouting every 3 to 5 days. A pencil point or knife helps stir the soil to look for eggs. Field scout by checking 25 plants in groups of 2 to 5 plants scattered around the field. Eggs may be more abundant in wetter areas of the field. There are no chemical treatment options in this stage, but again, scouting will help you determine the extent of infestation and whether an at-plant treatment should be applied in subsequent plantings. There are more pesticide options for control of cabbage maggot than the other maggot pests. Available products can be found in the appropriate crops insect control section of the New England Vegetable Management Guide. There's Coragen, Veramark, they may be applied at planting. Radiant or Entrust may be applied to leafy, not root brassicas at planting, and in up to 2 additional applications to seedlings. Other management tips include delay plantings until after first peak flight, usually mid-May, depending on GDDs, or when soil temperatures are high enough to kill eggs, 95 degrees. Planting in late May into June is generally safer than in the first half of May. Cultivate previous brassica crops so that the crop is brought up around the stem to encourage advantageous root formation. This can help compensate for root loss if maggots are present. Natural enemies. Naturally occurring soil-dwelling beetles, including carabid ground beetles and staphylinid rove beetles, feed on cabbage root eggs, larvae, and pupa, and can cause high levels of mortality. One of the staphylinid species, which I will not try to pronounce, they also parasitize maggot larvae and have been shown to respond to chemicals given off by plants that suffer maggot damage. Because these soil-inhabiting beetles are susceptible to insecticide, broadcast soil insecticide treatments should be avoided. Other natural enemies include parasitic wasps and predatory mites. Nematodes for biological control. Soil application of the entomopathogenic nematode. I'm going to butcher this. My apologies. Steneremina fetalea. There's no L there. I'm not sure why I added an L sound. But anyways, has shown efficacy against cabbage maggot in trials, even at low soil temperatures, like 50 degrees Fahrenheit. Apply by suspending juvenile nematodes in water and treating transplants prior to setting in the field as a spray or soaking drench, or in transplant water used in the water wheel transplanter, or in a combination of pre-plant and post-plant applications. Post-plant treatments are likely necessary if maggots begin. Flight begins more than 1 week after transplanting. Rates of 100,000 to 125,000 infective juveniles per transplant have been shown to be needed to achieve reduction in damage. Nematodes need a moist soil environment to survive. On to the third, we have onion maggots. This pest begins its flight when cabbage maggots are at peak flight. Yellow rocket bloom is an indicator of the beginning of the onion maggot flight. NOAA has a pest model forecast for the onion maggot emergence. Delaying planting is not a practical method of avoiding this pest because onions are typically planted very early in the spring and are in the ground for about a month before the onion maggot becomes a problem. In onions, newly hatched larvae crawl behind the leaf sheath, enter the bulb, and feed on the roots, stems, and developing bulb. Feeding damage can also allow for the entry of soft rot pathogens. Some tips specific to managing onion maggots include: minimize mechanical and chemical damage to onions throughout the season. Onion root systems are not as hardy as brassicas, so hilling them will not encourage more root production to recovery from root feeding. Hilling leeks can be recommended practice for developing a longer stalk, though. Gather cold bulbs into deep piles as opposed to plowing or harrowing after harvest. This will limit fly reproduction to the surface layers of the coal pile. Naturally occurring fungal diseases occasionally will reduce onion maggot numbers, particularly when flies are abundant and relative humidity is high. During a fungal epidemic, dead flies can be seen clinging to the highest parts of plants along field edges. As cabbage maggot, predaceous ground beetles, and entopathogenic nematodes may help reduce maggot numbers. Avoid broadcast insecticide treatments to protect beneficial insects and follow nematode application recommendations above. As always, check the New England Vegetable Management Guide for more details. All right, we're on to the next section, aphid biocontrol in high tunnels. There are both chemical and biological control options for managing aphids in high tunnels. So planning ahead for successful aphid biocontrol. Many biological control agents, especially parasitoids, are only effective on certain aphid species. Correctly identifying the species of aphid affecting your crop is an important first step. So you got green peach aphid. They can vary in color from green to pink to red, which seems misleading in the name. They could be distinguished from the melon cotton aphid by the length and color of the cornicles, the pair of tube-like protrusions extending from the end of the abdomen. Green peach aphids have relatively long cornicles and only the tips are black. In addition, the tubercles, which are bumps at the base of the antenna, are prominent and turned inwards, appearing as a distinct indentation between the antenna. There is a picture. Hosts include peach, apricot, and over 200 species of herbaceous plants, including vegetables and ornamentals. Melon or cotton aphids. The cornicles on melon cotton aphids are short and vary in color from light yellow to very dark green, making them appear black. The antennae are typically shorter than the body. They do not have a distinct indentation at the base of the antenna like the green peach aphid, and its host range includes hundreds of species, including vegetable crops such as peppers, eggplants, spinach, asparagus, and okra, and is particularly damaging to cucurbits. There is a very good drawing of what that indentation looks like in the print version. Foxglove aphid. They have dark green flecks at the base of their cornicles. In addition, they have black markings on their leg joints and antenna. Foxglove aphids tend to fall off plants when disturbed. They can cause severe leaf distortion, so more so than the green peach and melon cotton aphid. This aphid has many hosts, including foxglove, lettuce, potato, clover, and bulbs. Potato aphids. They can be green or pink, and both colors are often found on the same plant. They are larger and with a more elongate body shape and move more quickly than most other common aphids. These aphids complete 2 to 6 generations on their winter host of rose plants before moving to their summer host, which include potato and tomatoes. Therefore, this aphid pest is not typically seen in tunnels until later in the season, but they have been reported as a growing problem among high tunnel tomato growers, and keeping an eye out them early is a good idea. Cabbage aphids are not typically considered a tunnel pest, but have been reported in tunnels with overwintered brassicas. Mature females are grayish green with dark heads and cornicles. Adults produce a powdery wax coating that makes them appear dusty. Cabbage aphids are restricted to brassica species. Root aphids. The primary root aphid overwinters as eggs and infest plants in the spring and fall. Root aphids may be misidentified as mealybugs because they are covered with white wax, although they are smaller than mealybugs. Root aphids have reduced cornicles that resemble rings, which are located at the end of the abdomen. These cornicles are difficult to see with the naked eye, but can see when magnified, like a field lens. All right, biological control. In general, Aphid predators are better at controlling aphid high aphid populations compared to parasitoids, as they are not efficient at finding low numbers of aphids within the crop. So you got lady beetles. They're sold as adults and are effective at quickly controlling high aphid populations, but they are highly dispersive and will readily leave the tunnel in search of food if aphid populations are low. They can be effective if released under row cover in winter greens. Adults and larvae are generalists, meaning that they feed on a wide variety of aphid species. Next, you have predatory midges. They're another generalist aphid predator and can be purchased and released in your tunnel. They are active in summer months, but when the day lengths shorten to less than 15 hours, from September to March, they enter diapause and become inactive. Larvae feed on aphids, and adults feed on pollen and aphid honeydew. Banker plant systems used to support a type of predatory midge will also support some other midges. The midges pupate in the soil, so place banker plants in a tray with moist sand to provide pupation sites if your tunnel has plastic mulch and weed mat. Green lacewing larvae also feed on many aphid species. Adults feed on pollen and nectar, and lacewings can be purchased at any life stage. Larvae tend to survive better than eggs and are best for immediate pest control. Release far apart from each other, as larvae are cannibalistic. In summer months, if temperatures rise above 90 degrees Fahrenheit, lacewings will move out of the tunnel. Lacewing activity and life cycle slows as temperature drops, but one report from Purdue University report that adults remained active and laying eggs at 52 degrees Fahrenheit. In addition to introduced aphid predators, naturally occurring predators such as the seraphid hoverflies and native lady beetles, which make their way into tunnels and greenhouses, can also contribute to control of aphid pests. Conservation biological control practices may be used to enhance the population of these predators in a given area by providing them with resources such as food and shelter. This includes planting insectary plants such as sweet alyssum, which have been shown to attract hoverflies whose larvae can provide effective control to aphids. Next section is biological control using parasitoids. Aphid parasitoids in the genre Aphidus and Aphelinus are wasps that lay their eggs in host aphid. The resulting wasp larvae develop within the aphid, eating the host from the inside. The remaining shell of the aphid becomes tan or pink and is called a mummy. Adult parasitoids emerge from the aphid mummies and continue the cycle. Parasitoids are effective controlling low populations of aphids and preventing outbreaks, but are not effective at managing high populations. They're generally more efficient than aphid predators at seeking out the aphid host at low levels. Parasitoids are less effective at cold and hot temperatures and function best in the range of 65 to 77 degrees Fahrenheit and with 70 to 85% relative humidity. They do not enter diapause, however, they can be used at colder temperatures. Aphid parasitoids are host-specific in terms of the aphid species they attacked. There's a table below. Currently, no parasitoids are commercially available for cabbage and root aphids. Mixtures of different parasitoid species are commercially available and should be used when multiple aphid species are present or when you cannot identify the aphid species in your tunnel. Parasitoids are shipped either as adults or aphid mummies, from which parasitoid adults soon emerge. To increase parasitoids' effectiveness, place small groups of the aphid mummies in cups near aphid colonies. Do not let these aphid mummies get wet. Release rates may vary depending on the parasitoid species. Containers often contain 250 aphid mummies, which can treat 5,000 square feet at high release rate, or 25,000 square feet at low release rate for less severe outbreaks. Aphid parasitoids must be applied preventatively to suppress aphid populations. They are less effective when aphid populations are high and already causing plant damage. Release parasitoids on a regular basis to sustain their population during the growing season. Avoid releasing parasitoids near sticky cards to prevent capturing the released parasitoids. When scouting, look for aphid mummies that have circular holes on one end. These are the exit holes created by adult parasitoids during emergence. They are sensitive to pesticides, so releasing parasitoids preventively on crops you know are susceptible to aphids so that the parasitoids will be present when aphids are first noticed. They are themselves susceptible to parasitism from other wasp species. These wasps that parasitize parasitoids are called hyperparasites. Hyperparasites will move into tunnels throughout the summer and lay eggs within aphids that have already been parasitized by the parasitoids. The hyperparasite larva then feeds on the parasitoid larva and emerge in an adult hyperparasite emerges from the aphid mummy. The exit holds of the aphid mummies can be used as an indicator of the hyperparasitoid population. They leave a round, smooth-edged exit hole, and whereas the hyperparasitoid leave a slightly irregular exit hole with jagged edges. There is a large table of the different things that you can use, and which pests are their target species, and the effective conditions, and notes. I'm not going to read through that, but you should definitely check it out. Next is the banker plant systems. Banker plant systems are used to maintain parasitoid populations within a tunnel when host pest populations are low, so that the parasitoids do not leave the tunnel looking for hosts. The trade-off of using time and space to grow banker plants and maintain the non-pest aphid populations is that you don't need to continually order and release parasitoids in your tunnels. In the case of aphids and high tunnel crops, banker plants are used to maintain and distribute populations of Aphidus calamae, which parasitizes green peach and melon aphids. They go through some other examples. So when they are released onto the grass plants, they parasitize a type of aphid, a bird cherry oat aphid, and then the parasitoid population is maintained and the wasps are present in the tunnel when aphids arrive in the main tunnel crop. Recent research from the University of North Carolina found that this system worked best using wheat or barley as the banker crops compared to oats or rye. There has been limited research on how many banker plants are needed for a given area. Regardless, banker plants need to be distributed evenly throughout the tunnel because the species that you're trying to attract, they only migrate 3 to 6 feet from the point of release or emergence. One rate recommendation given is one banker plant per 1,000 square feet. Adjust your banker plants based on your experience. As with all parasitoid systems, banker plants need to be placed before pest aphids are even noticed. So starter aphid banker plants are available from several biological control suppliers. One starter kit is enough to get your banker plant system started for the season, as long as you're growing your own pots of oat, rye, or barley. Next is entomopathetic. Oh my gosh, I just butchered this. Anyways, we'll try it one more time. Entomopathogenic fungus. I think I got it that third time. So Bieria bassiana is commercially available as the products Mycotrol and Botanigard. Because aphids have high reproductive rates and molt rapidly, especially during the summer, repeat applications are typically required. That fungus is most effective when aphid populations are low, though. This fungus may not be compatible with the convergent lady beetle, depending on the concentration of spores applied. There's a bunch of resources to check out, bunch of links. There's a step-by-step for the aphid banker plant system. There's a schedule for biological applications. So next, there's the news. There's a MDAR Agricultural Education Survey. There's results from the UMass Extension Weed Survey. I guess the most interesting thing is that grasses were identified as the most difficult to manage weed. All three of the next most troublesome weeds were perennial weeds: bittersweet, nutsedge, and bindweed. Herbicides and hand weeding were the most commonly used weed management tool. Herbicides were also the tool that people wanted the most information about. There's URI laser scarecrow available, which sounds cool. Research at the University of Rhode Island, Cornell Cooperative Extension in the University of Florida, USDA, APHIS, National Wildlife Research Service, has shown that the use of automated lasers can significantly reduce bird damage to sweet corn. The URI Laser Scarecrow Project is making experimental devices available to growers who want to try the technology on their farms. Fully assembled scarecrows are available for $800 each to participating farms. A single unit has a protection radius of 300 to 500 feet for sweet corn. MDAR grants, so there's FSIG, there's the Urban Agricultural Program, there's the Agricultural Food Safety Improvement Program, Climate Smart Agricultural Program. These are all open right now. Some of them are closing sooner than other ones. There's a note on uses of chlorpyrifos on food products in 2024. So in 2021, EPA revoked all tolerances for chlorpyrifos, I just butchered that again, on food crops, meaning it would be unlawful for there to be any residues on it on food and feed, thereby making it illegal to use on food crops at all. However, that ruling was challenged in November 2023. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled to vacate EPA's final rule on those tolerances and instructed EPA to issue a new rule that takes into consideration several specific uses of the pesticide in agricultural crops that it had described in its initial review of the materials. A new final rule from EPA is pending, and EPA said that it expects to propose a new rule to revoke the tolerances associated with all but the 11 uses referenced by the court. So they're limited to 11 crops and specify the region's state. The only vegetable crop identified was asparagus, and Massachusetts was not included among the states considered for retention of the use for this review. There's more information if that is applicable to you. Next, we got some events. You can check that out. There's Twilight meetings. There's Fundamentals of Organic Production, Transition to Organic Partnership Programs. And that brings us to the end of the Veggie Notes for this week. Like I said, there's tons of links for more information in here, because I definitely did not cover the tables, and the tables and some of the pictures are very useful. Anyways, I hope you guys have a great time growing. Later.